The name of this talk is Freaking 101. It is something I dreamed up because the thing is called Freak Nick, and I looked at the talks that were being given, and none were about phone freaking. It just seemed kind of odd. Basically, what I want to do is I just want to talk a little bit about the telephone system, talk about some of the people who were a part of it, some of the things that happened in its history, and the rise of the phone freak and the phone freak to the present day. It's mostly historical, a lot of strange names in it. Some of it you'll know, some of it you won't. We'll see what happens. Anyway, so telephones invented by Alexander Graham Bell, right?
No,
that's right, yes. In fact, over the course of the first 10 years of the Bell telephone history, they are sued somewhere in the range of 600 times in the process of existing, as people say, no, I did it first. Usually people say that Mr. Gray created it first, but the fact that he got to the patent office, I think it was 3 hours too late, just as it was the same patent office that Alexander Graham Bell was in. Mr. Bell had a great dream for his beautiful telephone, which was that it was going to be a way for people to listen to music in their homes. The idea being that the central office would have some sort of symphony or something, and you'd tune in that night on your phone to listen to the music. That didn't quite work out. When they asked Alexander Graham Bell at the end of his life what his greatest achievement was, he said, "I was a teacher for the deaf." That was always his biggest interest. He did the other things just because, what the heck? So, at the beginning of the telephone system, basically, the first telephone directory is a list of names. Because you'd pick up the phone, and the person on the other end of the line would basically say, "Who do you want?" And you'd say, "This person," and you'd get them. As is commonly known, the first telephone operators are young teenage boys. But what they run into is the young teenage boys just can't help but fucking with the customers. They didn't sit down. Basically, the switch system was in front of them that they were clicking from here to here to connect this person to this person. And they would connect people to the wrong people, listen into the calls, prank people, and generally be bastards. So they get rid of these young, troublesome boys, and they replace them with female operators. Specifically, Emma Nutt is the first telephone operator, and others come along. Once you were, certainly through the first part of the telephone system up to World War II, if you were a female operator and you got married, you were fired. So generally, they were single women who worked in it till they were about 24 and 25 and got married, and that was the end of that. Now, the first problem that they run into, or the one that comes in first, is a gentleman named Stroger. Stroger comes up with an automatic switch for telephone systems. Does anyone know what he did? Yes? He was a funeral director. He was concerned that one of the operators was getting the calls that were going by when somebody died and letting his competitors know that the dead body was there and they were taking his business. He creates a switch in the late 1870s, and he does abso-friggin-lutely nothing with it. Then his nephew takes it, and they create what's known as the Stroger switch. Now, when the Stroger switch occurs, now that's when you have what's called a dial phone. As some of the people here are younger every day, in fact, I just do want to know, how many people here were alive when the telephone system monopoly was broken up? Okay. The time that I'm talking about here is a burgeoning telephone system, basically the Bell system and Western Electric, which was basically this other ancestral equipment company that they owned but didn't quite own. So, you know, up until 1984, there's 1,000 phone companies, actually. It turns out their phone company, we think of as a monopoly, actually only really took the good parts. But rural phone systems, well, Bell didn't want those. So actually, if you go to a lot of places, there are still these remnant telephones companies. Certainly there were 1,600 by the late 1800s competing in rural areas that nobody cared about. They generally weren't very good, and they all generally tended to fail, except for a few. All of them used this ancient equipment, basically the Stroger switch. Of course, the Stroger switch is used for the next 100 years, and in fact is still in use in some parts of this country. The way that it works is it's a series of relays. And the series of relays, basically every time you go click, 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 it goes along with one switch. And then the next click, click, click that goes through goes to a switch below until you have the phone number. And from that, it figures out it wires out this way. Now, imagine a building fucking full of those. That's calling 358.
You thought your server room was bad.
So when you used to go into the central offices, which I hope by now everyone knows, a central office is essentially every time you had a exchange, you had 10,000 numbers in it, 000 to 9999, and that would end up with 10,000 numbers, and they had a building for it. And then each one had a building in an area. And the building would be full of these switches, which would all be going at full bore all the time, and it was like hell on Earth. The Stroger switch is replaced somewhat by something called a panel switch, which is a Stroger switch with a little more, basically it had a way to relay its information to others. It was a way to increase capacity. Most people don't think of that one. The one they think of is crossbar. Crossbar is another one of these systems. Now keep in mind, area codes are not invented until 1948. Up to that point, you basically had to have an operator to do anything. In fact, there's a good number of songs which refer to, hey Central, do this, because you'd pick up the phone and go, hey Central, get me New York. In 1920, it would take 20 minutes to get a phone call from New York to London, and it cost you, I think it was something in the range of, for the in the money of that time, about $200. So you didn't want to do that. But when they started to work on the area code system, like I said, they created it in 1948 because they need a way for these automatic switching systems to connect through other areas outside of the exchanges without human intervention, so they can make it that much quicker. They do their first area code split in 1949. Very good, 1949. Illinois didn't have enough. The next split, I don't think, is until the late 80s. Now, keep in mind, one thing which is lost on people today is the pure hugeness of the telephone system. By 1974, there is enough plastic used in Bell telephones to cover 25 states east of the Mississippi with 1/4 inch of plastic. There's enough wire in the system to go to the moon and back 3 times. There is, let's see, at that point, the company writes off as uncollectible. In other words, stuff we just couldn't collect. More money than General Motors or Gulf and Western or 10 other of the Fortune 500s make. They're making something in the range, like they make about $150 million a year in the 70s. The phone company's making $60 billion. The telephone network in our country is one of the only few that is actually run by a private company. In almost every other country, the post office tends to control it. It's one of those things, mostly because it's this untenable thing. The concept of equal access and the concept of the last mile, although they don't call it the last mile, it's some new stupid thing from the 80s. But basically the equal access idea was everyone in the Everyone in the United States should have a phone. Now we do not have 100% penetration even to this day. There are still places that don't have phones, can't get phones. Oh well. But they've gotten 98%. That's not bad. That's pretty good. They can telemarket all those guys. So the phone system is considered by some people who think this way as the world's largest computer in history because it's a series of interconnected switches that communicates. You can pick up the phone anywhere in this country and call pretty much every other phone in the rest of the country. Now, you know, obviously today we have a little more blockage that way, but the idea is there, the idea of this massive, massive network. Well, you have this beautiful network, and you have this beautiful setup. So it stands to reason there will be people who were outside of that system, who were a part of it and knew of it, but wanted to learn more. And the only way to really learn more was to become a Bell telephone employee. And what if you weren't? What if that's not how you had your money? And what if you wanted to know? Because the thing that's really lost now in this day and age is the phone is no longer a mystical instrument. It's just another thing. It's just like, oh, you don't go, oh God, the world of possibilities opened by my oven. Oh, the beautiful world that's open to me now. I can take this food and make a cook and beautiful thing. No, doesn't happen because it's just some appliance. Well, the phone now is just another setup. It's just another thing. But at the time, it was this self-contained instrument that you did not own because the phone company made its money not by the long-distance phone calls, not by charging you. They made money by charging you a certain amount of money, like $1 a month, to rent your phone. You never owned your phone. You had this thing. One of the ways you can tell a play is really old is because they use a phone as a murder weapon. There's these old black phones. That was your color. Good days those were. You had this black phone. You could grab it and you could kill a man with it. And it never broke. And if it broke, a guy came out and fixed it because it was their phone. You never owned it. And that sense of this thing is in your house, we lived with for many, many years. The reason that it all goes away, obviously, is because of the Carter phone decision. In 1968, there was a company who want to make a taxi radio system which uses telephones to increase the size of the two-way radios. So you could have your radio sequence, but it would also be sending it across a phone. That's illegal! You're not allowed to do that. That's the phone network. You're going to break it. So they sue through the FCC, and in 1968, they win. However, the telephone company says, well, the problem is that we really have to put a device on the line between you and your foreign device, and that's going to cost you money. And they collect that money for the next 10 years until they're sued again because they don't need to do that, and they have to give it all back. The Carter phone decision is what opens up modems in this country, by the way. Modems make the appearance in this country in 1962. 300 baud, and they show up well into, you know, obviously when people think of modems, they have a vision in their mind of speed. Their first modem was a 300, 1200, 2400, 56, 40, you know, whatever, cable modem, you lucky bastards. And I've talked to a man who had a 9600 baud modem in 1972, and it was only $10,000. Required a leased line, and you had to have two of the same. And so it was possible, but it wasn't very much of a good idea. Dennis Hayes creates one for the S100, which then becomes one he creates for the Apple II. A Beautiful World extends from that. Probably wondering where I'm going to get about phone freaking now. So think of this system that is this monolithic system that you do not own, that is in your house, that is universal, that has all these mysterious things. You know that only linemen can be on there. Only operators can operate it. So, like the good old days with computers, you really didn't pay that much attention to the concept of security. You locked your building. You locked your truck. You tried to do that. You didn't care about what was going on the phone. And the phone company made one mistake. It was a financial decision. It was a choice called in-band signaling. In-band signaling is where you send the control tones for a system across the same lines the schmuck on the end of the line is calling. In other words, it's like when you go to a record store and you see the record schmuck type in the password in front of you to get the thing out of the warehouse. And later you're like, that's pretty cool. And later they have got a little problem with their warehouse. Well, it's not very easy to determine what these mysterious tones are, what some of these numbers are, one of these strange things that are set up. So this is where that infamous number comes from. There is a tone you send down the line to alert the trunk, which is part of the crossbar system, to release, and because there was an operator on the other line, and that operator needs to make some things happen. That tone is 2600 hertz. 2600 hertz is also the same tone that comes out of a Captain Crunch whistle. In the 1960s, there is a Captain Crunch cereal. They release a whistle. It happens to come out something like 2700 hertz, which is within the form. And that is discovered by? Bullshit! John Draper never discovered that whistle. And I always make it a personal point to point that out to people. John Draper knew a guy. His name is Joe Ingresia. He's from Tennessee. He's blind. He can listen to the tones and know what they are. He can whistle them back. Joe Ingresia becomes known as the Whistler. And the Whistler reaches out to another group of set of blind phone freaks. They don't have a name. They don't have a web page. I'm sorry. They don't have a logo. They didn't crack anything. But they are a group of blind phone freaks. And keep in mind, at this time, you do not have that ability that we have now, which is a very precious thing, where one set of vandalizing teenagers can meet another set of vandalizing teenagers, declare themselves a group, and get Newsweek to report on them. Joe Ingresia and this other group pass special things they've discovered, numbers they've found, things that are interesting to them, back and forth. Draper hangs out with them. In fact, it's Draper who talks to enough people that he ends up talking, I'm going to skip ahead, to a gentleman named Ron Rosenbaum, who writes an article for Esquire called Secrets of the Little Blue Box. And Surprise, surprise, after this national magazine reports about this phone fraud featuring a guy, John Draper goes to jail for the first of three times for phone fraud. Anyway, so let's skip back there. Back then, you didn't have any sort of a house organ for telling people about phone phreaking. Phone phreaking was something people did. It was something that their secret little thing. They discovered things like panel pulsing, like left apart conference lines that phone linemen had left for each other so they could all dial in during the day and talk to each other. They found a thing called loops, which are a very beautiful thing. A loop number and another loop number, when they call, connect to each other. It is a beautiful way, if you think about it, it is almost in its own way a bizarre form of encryption. You can call up this other number, and whoever's on the other line who calls the number gets you. But they don't have your number. They never get your number. You can be anywhere. It's this beautiful thing. They discover that, the loops, and panel pulsing basically is just, it's basically another way to use step by step. Now, in the 60s, there are a group of people who kind of get known in the media for phone phreaking. To this day, they end up being the ones we know about. For instance, the Midnight Skulker, who was a gentleman who liked to go on what are called phone trips. He would basically go with a reel-to-reel to different areas of the West Coast and record just the weird crap. He has a web page, which I can give the URL to. I have it somewhere here. Basically, you know, he'll go to one of the recordings that I love is where he calls up one to the operator and says, so, who's available that I can call? You know, which city can I call? And she tells him the city. And it turns out it's an operator in Washington who can only connect people to Seattle. That's all she can do. You want to call long distance? Well, she's going to have to connect you to Seattle first. And that's the end of it. And he does what's called tandem stacking, where he connects through a bunch of trunks around the world. One of the interesting things you could do was basically using a device that put out these tones that Mr. Ingressia could whistle. Specifically, you had to have two tones together in some cases, so obviously that put Joe out of it. They could tell this trunk, hey, connect me to this trunk. Great, now connect me to this trunk in Russia. Now connect me to this one in Hawaii. Connect me to this one in Japan. And then you could go, hello, and pick up the phone next to you, and you'd hear, hello, because your voice had now just traveled around the world, and the amount of time it took electricity to move your voice through all that stuff gave you this significant delay. Now you're either going, that's a waste of life. What's the point of that? Or you're going, that's the cool shit, I was born too late. See, there's a spirit there. There is an interest in the network for its own purposes. They don't really care too much about things like the fact that, well, when you're the operator, operators don't really pay for all their many calls, do they? What's important is you're learning all this incredible wacky-ass shit that the phone company has set up over the course of 100 years. To make things easier for themselves, and you are just running through it because there's nothing. So in the 1960s, there are a group of people who find out that it's possible to make free phone calls. Primarily, they are roadies who travel with bands and need to call home, and the mafia who discover that, dude, free calls from anywhere. They do this using a device called a blue box. The blue box is basically an operator control console in a box. It's basically got a set of signals. The intricacies of it are something that I'm not going to go into, simply because it's basically like any other tool. There are many ways to use it. You can make it do a lot of things, and one things that are traded is that people find new ways to do it, and they trade. Oh, look what I can do with the blue box. Look what I can do here. Tracing is not as easy as it is now. In fact, one of the things that the blue box causes is the installation of something called ESS, electronic switching systems, which is basically a computer that does it instead of a bunch of relays. ESS brings a bunch of things that are really nice. They bring call forwarding, they bring hold, they bring call waiting, they bring a lot of stuff like that, but they also bring the ability to trace like that. They own you right there. There's no more of that little delay of like, oh, I'm only on for 30 seconds, I'm off. No, those days are over with ESS. Now, one of the interesting things about phone phreaking is this very interesting connection to boxes. And I've always tried to figure out what the draw was, but people, I like to think, love the idea of some magic device that does something really fucking cool that other people can't, like a magic wand. So the blue box has a companion at that time in the 60s called the mute box. The mute box takes advantage of a little problem with the step-by-step system. See, the step-by-step system uses voltage to figure out what's going on. So when a phone is ringing, it's 75 volts. When a person picks up the phone, it drops down to 20 volts on the line. The thing goes, hey, someone picked up. Bill, Bill, Bill. Well, the black box will go, no, 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 here, here, 75 volts. Here, here, take it. So while you're talking to the guy, it's ringing on you. I mean, you're like, hi, buddy. But it's free. It's free. Same reason people have no problem with bootleg music and no problem with a, you know, 24 kilohertz MP3. It's free. So the mute box, or the black box as it's later called, becomes the first of these sets of boxes. And in fact, there's a brother to it called the red box, which basically simulates the coins in a payphone. Because it turns out that it has in-band signaling. And it ends up telling you, put these tones this amount of time for this quarter for this nickel. However, in the 60s, they don't really have a way to play the thing conveniently. I mean, they're using reel-to-reels. So what they end up doing is they call the operator and they say, hi, I make a call, and they're like, deposit this. And they take the phone next to them and they put it against the microphone with the handset of the other one and drop coins into it to make it sound like they're putting the money in, which, as far as the operator knows, perfectly working. The phone company figures this out. What is their solution? Move phones away from each other whenever they can, especially in places where this is happening. Just rip out one of the phones. Oh, that fixes that problem. Yay for them. The phone company at this point is quite a juggernaut. They don't really care. They don't have to. They are the phone company. This, of course, changes in the mid-70s after the most major antitrust law comes against them. Then you start to see things like multiple colors on phones, princess phones, antique phones. You start to see this love of the customer, which is really problematic for them because they've spent 100 years being the utility. Now they have to be your buddy. In the early 1970s, there is a magazine called Ramparts that puts out a magazine article about how to build a black box. The phone company's solution to this is pretty simple. Sue Ramparts, which stops the distribution of most of the magazines. Demand a list of the people who have the magazine so they can go to their house, which they don't quite get. And then go to every newsstand that carries Ramparts and steal them. That's the last big hurrah of the phone company in that way, that kind of bald-faced approach, because things start to get a little bit hot in the early 70s. A gentleman named Abigail von Hoffman, which most people know as Abby Hoffman, who loves to fuck with people as a fun thing, creates a group, which is actually just a few of his friends, called the Youth International Party, the Yippies, which is basically a parody of the hippies. And they're saying, let's fuck with the system. No peace, love, and whatever. Fuck with them. Steal bread. Get yourself free phone calls. Get yourself, live off the system. Fuck the system. So to kind of spread their word, they create a little newsletter called the Youth International Party Line, Yipple. And they give away flyers at this one event. And basically, they get 30, 40 subscribers. And off it goes. And the first thing it prints is the telephone company's credit card code. Because it turns out the telephone company kind of uses the same formula to generate credit card codes. At the time, here's your phone number, use this thing, here's his code. This goes on for a while. Now, keep in mind, there's a lot of hatred against the phone company at this point because of a thing called the war tax. The war tax was basically a way to pay some of the costs against the Vietnam War by adding 10% to everybody's bill. Well, the Vietnam War ends, and the tax kind of doesn't. So now everyone's a little pissed. This is only one of many things that the phone company have done that make people very angry against it. Now, these other phone freaks, the Joe Ingrassias, the Whistler, the Midnight Skulker, they love the phone company. They don't hate them. They think of them as this cool, neat, galumphing thing. Big, wonderful, dumb, and a wonderful place to play. These other guys aren't so interested in that. They want the phone company gone. They want them dead. They want these guys out of it. They want the government out. They want these guys out. Get them out. The Youth International Party Line is mostly about politics. Fuck them, basically. And the editor who helps Abby Hoffman calls himself Al Bell. Al Bell is kind of not really interested in the politics. He kind of just digs the phones. He kind of digs the cutting off the electric meter so it looks like you're not using electricity. Well, Abby's like, more politics. Al is like, well, how about more technology? And eventually, they have a little split. And Al Bell renames Yipple to TAP, the Technological Assistance Program. And TAP proceeds to go through the 70s into 1983 as the source for phone freaks, the source for burgeoning hackers, for radio people, for people who want to just screw around with things. It's a place where you can find out how to freebase cocaine. It's a place where you can find out how to stop your gas meter. It's the place where you can find out how to build a blue box, which they, of course, happily give out. That all comes to an end with the firebombing of Al Bell's house in 1983. He says, well, I guess I'm getting out of this now. And he gives it to a guy named Cheshire Catalyst. Unfortunately, Cheshire's not so good at running a magazine, and it folds within about a year. But at the same time that TAP is starting to fold, another young bunch of upstarts are like, we can do this much better. So a gentleman named Eric Corley starts a magazine called 2600 Magazine. And 2600 Magazine subsists to this day. One of the things that's very interesting about it, though, is that one of the things that people get very angry about 2600 is its politics. So it's a case of the technological magazine becoming political that rose from the political magazine that became technical. Now also, there's a slight event in the early 70s, late 70s, early 80s that start to happen. TAP has regular meetings at a diner where the phone freaks and the hackers and the other weirdos meet. And basically, from there, you end up with this small community of people who also are using these neat bulletin board systems. These computers hooked up to modems that people can dial in one at a time, leave messages and post things, and files, and anything else they wanted to. And from there, we start to see some of the very early freaking systems. For instance, there's one called Modem Over Manhattan, which is a very popular system with the freaks. But there is one system which was started to support the Ohio Scientific Computer that a person says, I'd like to start this. His buddy says, that would be great. Let's do that. So they create the Ohio Scientific Users of New York. Then the Ohio Scientific guy, even though he lent them the Ohio, he kind of takes an interest in other things. This leaves the other guy just kind of running the system. He doesn't know what to do with it. And suddenly the phone freaks arrive. And the phone freaks are having a grand old time and becomes Oceany. And Oceany begets any of a dozen more freak BBSs. And on these freak BBSs, this is where we start to see files. Files that are written by people like BIOC Agent 003, who writes the Basics of Telecommunications series, which is probably one of the best written files of that era. A 80-column, upper-lowercase, properly spelled explanation of much of the freaking information that had existed in fits and starts up to that point. BIOC Agent puts these files out, and to my great surprise, they are still extremely popular today. I still see them showing up in places, not really telling people that they are nearly 20 years old. And in fact, one of the most interesting things that's come out of runningtextfiles.com is, well, besides, of course, the interesting hate mail, is the people who come to it who just are like, oh, your info is so old. Because they just see it as, you know, they heard a couple years ago, and they're not aware that it's actually, in some cases, 20 years old. So what we have there are the beginnings in the 80s of a different kind of freaking. You see, by that point, the telephone system no longer has the interest that it used to have. It's once again becoming a commodity. It's not what people are interested in. These computers are becoming interesting. The other things are becoming interesting. And there becomes the case that the only kind of people you see doing any sort of freaking work are doing it to get free phone calls. And oh, there are glorious ways to get free phone calls back then. I can recall, oh, systems where the code, the phone code, in other words, like now when you call up Sprint, you have to dial up your phone number plus 4 digits, and that is your phone code. It's a huge number. Back then, it was 4 numbers. And I mean, you would call an 800 number, and one of the 4 number digits you worked in would give you a dial tone, and now you called the world. Those days are over. But that interest, that, oh boy, I get the call for free because my computer is on for so long, and it costs me so much money because the phone system doesn't really have flat rates yet, that people concentrate on the free. So freaking becomes free. And to the present day, I have seen people make references to freaking software, to freaking some food off of a door, or freaking someone's car. You know, the word has become just a verb. And that's perfectly okay. One of the interesting things about computer culture to me is just the way that a word or a concept. For instance, K-Rad, I have now been able to trace to the fact that there was an Apple pirate in 1984 who talked too fast and had a really bad habit of saying K-bye instead of OK-bye. And his friends thought this was so funny that they constantly made reference to it in their messages. K-bye, K-see-ya, K-whatever. And one day they had to talk about a board, and the board was rad, and it became K-rad. So now when I see people say, oh, K-rad, that dates back to, 94, 95. You know, it's this warped thing that goes back to that period of time. I have a book, by the way, which I picked up some of my information. It's called The Phone Book by J. Edward Hyde. You can buy it used. It was written in 1975. It is the single most pissed book about the phone company in history. It is so angry. It talks about so much. It is... No, it's like a running joke, you see? It's like... Remember in the old days when we pulled the fire alarm? When we pulled the fire alarm. It's really cool. So, the question... I've covered quite a bit. I do want to mention one device just because I think historically it's interesting. In 1983, a company named Southwestern Data Systems creates a device, a modem. You know, just another modem, 300 baud. Turns out, actually, you can do a little hack too. You can get 1200 baud. I'm sure you all love 1200 baud when you think back to not actually doing it. But anyway, this device did it by having an analog to digital converter on it, which was controllable by the computer. And it could play up to 4 tones at once. So first people got it to play music. But it didn't take someone very long to figure out you could make a blue box with it. That was called the Apple Cat modem. It was on the market for about, 6 months before the phone company came and sued them and won. Very prized device, but those kind of things pop up every once in a while, that kind of use of technology. Before I open up to being bombarded with questions, I'm going to give one of you the opportunity to win this book. And the question is, what's at 185 2nd Avenue North in Nashville?
What? 2nd Avenue North, that's the big CO building.
It is the central office for this hotel.
Most of the city, I believe.
In fact, it controls 70 exchanges now, where one of these things used to control one. It's got the scariest fucking antenna on the top of it. I drove by it.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, it's that. There are kids with leukemia for 2 miles around on that thing. Its official name is NSVLTNMT, because there turns out to be a nomenclature called the CLLI for central offices. Now, keep in mind, I knew none of this a day ago. I did this because I cared, and I wanted to find out about it. And I found out that if you typed in the phone number of this place into a DSL company that would tell you whether or not you had DSL, it also told you about this thing called the central office code. I typed that into a search engine, and now I started to find out about these CLLIs that they use, and I found out that the code, NSVLTNMT, the first part, NSVL, stands for Nashville. The TN, after it, stands for Tennessee. The MT stands for switching that can do both toll and tandem switching, whatever the hell that is, but it can do it, and it's this code given to, and it costs you, if you want to build your own CEO, because I know you'll want to, it'll cost you $750 to be assigned your own code by the central phone authority. It's about 0.7 miles from here, and yes, Bell South owns it, and to my great surprise, that's what controls it, not that big fucking scary building I saw when I drove in. Keep in mind, I haven't been to Nashville before. Oh, the building that looks like it actually crushes other buildings as it needs to grow. Boom! You know, in terms of phone history, in terms of freaking history, I just wanted to be clear that there is this tradition, a lore, a wonder in people coming up against technology, not intending to destroy it, saying, how does the fire alarm work, instead of how do I fucking pull it? Ha ha, it made a noise like a crying baby. Because to me, it's much more interesting to find out, why are these things like this? Why did you make these choices? What led us to this point, as opposed to, can I break it with a hammer? And so, basically, that's the source of this talk. And hopefully some of you come away with absolutely useless information that you can say to people. And if nothing else, more than life itself. So, are there any questions about the history of phone phreaking or why the hell I'm still up here? Yes?
What do you know about the black box nobody ever built?
Excuse me?
The little black box nobody ever built.
The little... Are you talking about the blotto box?
Well, you hook a generator to it?
You hook a generator? At one point, people were calling a BBS called Blotto Land, run by a man named Mr. Blotto. Blotto had 16 phone lines. He was the shit in 1983. And people would, you know, whatever, they'd say, blah, 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 I've got plans for the blue box, which is TSPS operator, the red box, which is the phone code, the beige box, which is alignment handset, the white box, which is a phone dialer. The, where are some of the other great ones? There's a rock box. There is the Bagan box, the silver box, which gives you the extra tones that you can dial. Beautiful rainbow of friggin' boxes. Each one. So eventually someone says, well. That's right. So eventually they're like, well, you know, shut up because we've got the Blotto box. The Blotto box will fuck you up more than any box. So people are like, I need the plans for the Blotto box because it's a wear. It's a tradable thing. It's a thing you want to have. It's like when Ultima 2 came out, everyone wanted Ultima 3. When Beyond Castle Wolfenstein comes out, everyone wants Beyond Castle Wolfenstein. Then they want the expansion pack. Then they want the next thing is coming out. Well, after a while, you're like, yeah, it turns out there's an expansion pack, and it's a blend with Aliens versus Predator, and it's incredible. The guy's like, oh my god, I need to have that! And you're like, wow, that's a lot of fun there. That's even more fun than actually having that non-existent game. Let's fuck with that guy. So the Blotto box comes to existence. It's basically a Honda generator hooked up to a central office that you throw at full volume, and you're supposed to, quote, run away from the blue sphere. Supposedly it kills an entire area code. Another similar box called the urine box. The urine box kills the man at the end of the line. Basically, if you read it, it looks completely nice until you start reading the parts and realize they're all completely bullshit. And at the end, it's like, oh, this will melt the person, this will kill them. It's a horrible thing. And the thing I love about that is I collect a lot of old CD-ROMs and I go to a lot of pages to see what they have, and man, that sucker's right up there with the other ones. Right. We got the blue, we got the red, we got the urine. Any other questions? Yes? What are the remnants of phone freaking today? War driving. War driving and what will come after it. Because it gets kind of boring going around finding out that an accounting firm lets you get on their network. The next thing that comes is, wow, how can we use this network to set up something that nobody can touch, that moves around, that does these interesting things, that perhaps does stuff for me?
Community access.
Yeah. Well, community access, but more or less causing...
By using someone else's network that they haven't secured properly, it's community access, I'm traceable back to you.
I think that there are remnants like that where people say, well, here's this new thing. What can I do with it that's interesting? Each time, there is a layer where the government gets in on it and the law gets on it. And it's not quite as fun the first time one of you guys gets hauled off to jail. And everyone's like, whoa, that sucks. We'll have to be more careful. One of my favorite things was during the Drink or Die busts, which was the largest piracy bust that happened last year, December 8th. They seized 30 computers. Each one had an average of 600 gigs of pirated software on it. Was that I remember that there was an IRC channel where they all went to congregate to go, what do we do next? And it was that perception that, oh, we'll go to the safe haven of IRC. Sanctuary! You've been having your hand up for a long time, man. What's up? Right. Yeah, Mitnick caught on more than a lot of people that wireless telephones were the way to go. Of course, that's before they came a now when they've become a big, I'm right here. Now it's by law. Your phone has to constantly tell them where the big green arrow is that's over your head while you walk around. They will be using that to do some amazing things.
They detect traffic jams of it already.
Oh, yeah, they detect traffic jams. They're going to start getting you for speeding. They're going to start getting you being a place you shouldn't be. They're going to start finding a way to, you know, perhaps streamline the process.
Yeah, well, so why spend all the money on surgery when everybody carries
a phone?
Yeah, you get
a speeding ticket with your phone bill.
Just walk down into a phone company's office, walk back out again, and you'll get your ticket in the mail. Yes? I think voice over IP, it was to me, in its own way, a brilliant, interesting idea. That is to say, look, it's a computer. It puts it across it. What it did cause was it caused an enormous shitstorm because, you see, we pay less for our phones because we have these limits, and I don't even want to start to get into that stack of shit. When you make a phone call, that phone call actually costs a certain amount of money, a little bit more than your phone call sometimes. But they still do it because they have to do it. Well, voice over IP breaks it. Imagine if you're selling lemonade and you have to sell it at 20 cents, and then these kids are coming along with buckets who are just like taking lemonade in front of you and just dumping it to the next guy for no good reason, with buckets they borrowed from somebody else. Government buckets. Big gray government buckets full of lemonade, just fucking giving them away in front of you. You're like, well, this sucks. Who do I sue?
It's like the analogy of lemonade.
Yes?
Hey, yeah, I was told that it was still possible to gain free phone calls from payphones by grounding out something in the mouthpiece, for example.
Okay. The nature, okay.
We've been doing that in 1958, 59.
Yep, ground out the phone. What's the solution?
They didn't have holy phones back
right
then. I mean, it was a dial thing. We've been doing that. Just, let me tell you that.
And what's the solution? Glue the phones really hard. Don't
then
fix the.
Did you take a straight pin and stick it up behind the receiver and then you tap it?
Boom, boom, boom! Each one. Until they fix the system, that stuff happens. Now keep in mind, to this day, no doubt, many of these techniques still work. Just because there's places where they're still got step by step in some countries, they still got these stuff where red boxes work. Putting in new infrastructure to handle the current things that screw you up. It's a rat hole. They'll never do it. So yes, I mean, red boxes. I remember kids red boxing in the 90s. Sure, why not? They're red boxing in Canada now as we speak. Woohoo! Woohoo! 20 cents. Yes.
Yeah. I'm freaking as a culture. I just don't see it happening, and I'm wondering why. Why aren't we teching System 7?
Because the internet is much more interesting.
You know? I mean, like, fuck Verizon, attack those kitty fives in, like, Afghanistan and Brazil. Afghanistan, by the way, is clear 2200, clear 3100.
Yep, there you go.
Of course.
You know.
And I'm just saying, why not keep on exploring the phone system? Why not keep on publishing the white papers?
I'm sure they are.
We have got to get this information public. We've got to keep the culture thriving. And I'm drunk, I'm sorry.
People always, I like to give people an example of how great the internet is, and I love giving them an example that just makes them annoyed. The example is, there was a group of gentlemen whose sexual fetish is they like pumping air into their rectums until their stomachs distend. And there is a page for it where they have pictures and medical discussions and pictures that remind them of it. For instance, for some strange reason, the little rascals play into it in some strange way. And the thing to me is, there's maybe 5 of these motherfuckers in the world alone with their tubes. But thanks to the internet, they've all met each other. They probably have t-shirts now. And the thing is like, if guys who enjoy some sort of rectal pumping related to the little rascals can find each other, imagine what, 10 well-driven individuals, even out of this room, could do. Cult of the Dead Cow was 3 kids in Lubbock, Texas in 1984 who were just fucking around. They write some text files. One of them gets busted for freaking. So it's 2 of them. And from that, you have this thing now where people go, oh my God, Bout of the Cow. This huge thing where they fart and CNN is there with 35 cameras. The 2 reasons why are because Grandmaster Rat never gave it up, And Death Vegetable came along and felt the magic and pushed it all the way. Two of them. And then along comes Sir Distic and Dildog later to create, you know, Back Orifice. And get, but they come into the group, this thing, this wondrous thing, and bring it to an even higher level. Four well-driven individuals make the world into a different place. They change everything. Four. And I think that if any of you put yourselves to it, especially if you are young, nominally employed in something that's using perhaps one-fifth of your brain, and something where you can scribble in front of you the things you're going to do that night in some sort of cleared manner before you get drunk, you can cause the world to change in some amazing ways, and I really hope you do. I'm a little old. I'm a computer historian. I tell people about what happened, but everything I've said that happened, you can do. None of it is special. It just was where they were. You know, Ron Rosenbaum needed to talk to somebody, and this freak named John Draper was there and was willing to show him a blue box that a couple of his blind friends from Tennessee had. Great. And it became the blue box. And it became the phone freaks. And it became this thing. So, in every case, please, you know, try it. Can't hurt. What's the worst that happened? Go to jail. Yeah. Go to jail, get raped in the ass, die. Syphilis, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so...
That's it. That's all right there.
Syphilis. Any other questions?
Got a simple article aid.
What?
I got a fire from a phone company.
You got a what?
I got a fire from a long-distance phone company.
You're drunk and you have an idea. What?
I'm saying... Almost stood up. Almost is up from the underground. Need to get together and bust the system up and bring Verizon to its knees and say, yeah.
Whoever makes the thing I'm talking about, just put a cowboy hat on him and make him your spokesperson. Don't be there when he gives a big talk to be like, go man, go. All right.
Run with it.
Yeah. Dude, we're trying to get your bail together.
Everyone's talking about how freaking supposedly dead or whatever, but I got friends who still play with this stuff, like. New phones you can connect to.
I hope I never gave the impression that freaking was dead.
Well, people say stuff like that, right?
People do that. Yeah. If they don't see it, it's dead. If it's not in front of them, it's not there. If they don't remember it, it never was. That's IRC in a nutshell.